morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John McKay, how have you been?
Keeping busy.
Good. I took a little time off this last couple days and did some camping out in the mountains. Kind of that's, you know, that's that July summer thing.
But dirt camping, you said. So you guys built like a dirt hut.
It was dirt camping for sure.
Dirt fire.
I was excited to be back to running water. I'll tell you that much. I like selling houses that have running water, and I'm used to that environment. So, but no, great time. And man, we've just had a run of weather around here, which has just been fantastic. So good. I'm glad you kept the fort down while I was gone, McKay. It looks like the place is still up and didn't burn down, so that's good.
For the most part.
We've got with us in studio our in-house lending specialist from Home Street, Mr. Mike Denslow. Mike, how are you?
Still doing loans for houses that have running water.
Okay, fantastic. Sometimes that comes up as a necessary part of the appraisal. That's for sure.
Yeah, toilet, shower, sink.
Good, excellent.
All required.
These luxuries that we take for granted, for sure. Well, we always like to start off with a crazy celebrity real estate story, and I'll tell you what, when people change jobs or get a substantial raise, we will say at work, a lot of times it's amazing, but you see things happen with their property. So this week's crazy real estate story is we've got Steph Curry putting his $3.195 million home in California for sale on the market. Now, Mike, why do you think Curry might be selling that home now?
Well, for people who don't know, Steph Curry, Golden State Warriors, NBA champs. I think he just landed a big new contract.
Yeah, I think I saw something in the sports section, McKay. Maybe you could tell me about, was it $200 million?
$200 million. They signed a new deal, especially after they so deliciously crushed LeBron and company.
So just like,
I'm a Warriors guy, not a Cavs. Actually, our favorite team is the Spurs. So
okay,
and anybody else who beats the Cavs.
There you go. So it looks like a little bit of a raise for him might mean he would be shopping for a different house. So now this is interesting, too, about what happens in those situations is he had purchased the house, I mean, not too long ago. He purchased it for $3.2 million in 2015, then listed it last year for $3.6 million, so about $400,000 more. Now, took it off the market briefly, looks like finalized those contract negotiations. Back on the market now for $3.195 million. So he's actually below what he paid for it. Granted, by only $5,000, but below what he paid for it, and he's going to have commissions on that. So
I don't think he's too concerned.
I don't think he's too concerned, Mike.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to take a little loss there. But I have a feeling that it's going to be an upgrade. But I got to tell you, I don't know what the upgrade's going to be, but this place, pretty spectacular. It's in the Walnut Creek area of California, which is about as spendy as you can get for some of that real estate. And it's 7,500 square foot Mediterranean, crazy huge. I mean, it's got wine room. It's got a guest house with it. I mean, this place is decked out. And he did some renovations. So he did all of the renovations and that. And
man, you mean he had renovations?
He
done.
Had renovations. He paid for them. That's what I should have said. So gonna take a little bath on that one for sure. But it'll be fun to see. I bet you in 3 to 4 months you'll see me do a celebrity real estate story on what was purchased, and I can't wait to see what that looks like. So we always like to temper that real estate story with some local real estate news and what's going on in the local market. And I tell you what, big news for us, maybe I should leave for a couple days more often, but big news for us is we have finally hit 600 active listings again on the MLS.
Wow.
Which, you know, is not a huge deal as far as getting that much more. But for me, it's just kind of been a marker. We've been, you know, what I call red alert level. We had been, you know, in the 400s for so long, and that was just so radically different than what the Tri-Cities is used to, especially with the number of sales that we're having. So 606 was the number ran 2 days ago when I looked at those actives, still hanging in there at just a burning pace of 25 days on the market, average days on the market, which is just absolutely insanely fast. Now, that hasn't, that still has us with what we call kind of our absorption rate there being, you know, how much of that inventory are we burning up in a month? And, you know, that is at 64.2%. So down just a little bit, which you want to see that number go down a little bit, because it's an unbalanced market. Even at 600 listings, that still just gives us, which is up a little bit, a 1.6-month supply of homes on the market. And, you know, we say a balanced market is 6 months, where it's balanced for buyers and sellers. So still definitely needing more inventory, but to finally actually see it creep up, you know, we were in the 500s for about a month there and a couple weeks, and to finally see it creep back up, we've got some of that summer inventory that's hit the market and been on there, some of that new construction starting to come on the market. So just good to note that that is actually a healthy trend of what we're looking for there. We're still seeing stuff under 250 almost without exception being in multiple offers. But nice to see us at a point where we're looking at a little bit better supply of homes to keep the market moving with those numbers. So I was very, very excited to see that number. I've been waiting for that number. You know, we've got a lot of buyers in the wings that can't find places. And so it's helpful when we see that inventory number creep up there a little bit. So what are we talking about today? What's going on? Well, one of the things that I wanted to hit upon is we're always looking at, okay, why do we have a lot of buyers right now? Why do we have a lot of buyers in the wings that we haven't been able to find homes for in those lower inventory markets? And who is actually buying those homes? And so NAR, National Association of Realtors, actually released its 2017 report, and that is home buyers and generational trends. And so there's a lot of talk, there's been a lot of talk over the last 2 years about the trends of the millennial. And people hear, there's funny things that people say on, you know, you've seen the videos on YouTube and how millennials act, but the millennial buying power is really coming into its prime with real estate. So I wanted to go over what some of those generational trends are so people understood what was happening. And a lot of times we're coaching people, sellers in particularly, we're coaching them through reactions that millennial buyers have that they might not be understanding. And so that's one of the things that came up that said, okay, this is why I'm going to do the show this week on this, because one of the things that will happen sometimes is, for instance, an older way of negotiating might have been to let somebody stew on something for a couple days. So maybe you get an offer, and maybe it's close to the offer you want, but it's not exactly. So you might have somebody from an older generational gap say, you know what we would do in my day is we would let somebody sit on this for 2 or 3 days and think about it. Well, if you've hired me to negotiate with a millennial, I'm going to tell you that this is not the strategy that is going to help us get your home sold. If we're very close to it, I'll tell you, a millennial who has grown up with Facebook and Instagram, it's in the name Instagram. If you get an offer on a home and you get that offer at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and this is somebody you potentially want to counteroffer and work with, if you haven't responded to a millennial that same night with your counteroffer, They'll probably be out looking at other homes tomorrow, and by that response. And for someone that is not involved in that daily or have that interactions with that generation, that's not something that they understand. And so, you know, as an intermediary and as a good agent, is we're putting together the best of those both worlds. How can we help you get the most amount of money you need for selling your house, but also interact in a way with a different generation that wants those answers faster?
See, because I was raised, you ever heard fools rush in?
Yes, absolutely.
But see, I'm 54, so I look at them like, go to school, Joel, learn something.
See, John McKay, that is the perfect example is where, yeah, you had always been told fools rush in. And yeah. So you might not want to make that counteroffer. And so one of the things like you and I would do if I was doing that with you, McKay, is I would sit down, you know, when we listed the house and say, here's a scenario. If you get this offer, what would your counter be? And it might be you're not countering, or you're not going to, or you don't know. But having an idea and thinking about it ahead of time would help us prepare for if we got an offer from that. So here's why that's important. And here's one of the things as I researched this subject that came up and reported in this trends report is that the buyers 36 years and younger, so that gives you millennials and Gen Yers, is the largest share of home buyers. That's why this is important right now, because they're driving the market at 34% of all home buyers were millennials. So 34%, that's a huge market share that you just can't ignore. 66% of those buyers were also first-time home buyers. So that so the vast majority over that, you know, two-thirds of those buyers, this was their first home purchase. And so they're really driving the market right now. You know, for the longest time, it was people aged, you know, 37 to 51 in current time period, which would be your Gen Xers. And so for the longest time, they had driven the house market. But now they're actually, their purchases have dropped to 28%. That's the second, still the second biggest generation buying homes, but they've dropped down to 28% versus your millennials, which is 36%. Now, it is interesting to note, though, about the Gen Xers. So that's buyers 37 to 51. They are buying the highest median priced homes of all other buyers. So they're buying the most expensive homes and they're buying the largest homes. And that makes sense, because at that time, age 37 to 51, maybe you've had your second or third kid, your career, you've advanced. We talked about Steph Curry. He's advanced. He's gotten a raise. You also have gotten a raise. It might not be $200 million, but you've also gotten a raise. And so that is a time period where we see people take that jump and make that, you know, make that jump. So one of the things that we talk about, and we're going to talk more about as we jump into this subject, but one of the reasons why I love having Mike here is because how are these millennials buying their homes? And 88% of the group of those buyers used financing in their home purchase. So, Mike, I'm sure you're seeing this a lot. I mean, that's a big number. I mean, pretty much, 88 out of 100. Every one of them is going to be considering financing. So I tell you what, when we come back after the break, we're going to talk to Mike Denslow. We're going to say, what are these millennials doing for financing? How are they getting into their first homes? And look at a little bit more of the trends in millennial buying.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been going over a recently reduced, Reduced, Mike? Jeez, you know what? I did say earlier I had been on vacation for 4 days camping. I need to get out of the campsite, back into my job. No, reduced was not the word I was looking for. Released, a recently released report by the National Association of Realtors, kind of going over millennial buying trends. And right before the break, we notated that 88% of the home buyers in this category were using financing. And then there's been a lot of talk about this in the news about reducing student loan debt and how that's really a burden on this generation. And this report definitely reflected some of that. In fact, it said that 46% of those buyers in that millennial generation had student loan debt with a median balance of $25,000. So, Mike, I'm sure you see this when someone comes to you. What are some of the challenges and things that you've got to factor in when you're working with these millennial buyers?
It's all across the spectrum. Trying to get into one particular thing is tough, but have they built up their credit? Have they been on their job long enough? Student loan debts, other things, cars. A lot of people, when they get their first job and their first salary job or the first whatever, what do you want to do? Oh, I've been in college and starving and eating top ramen. I want a new car. Right. And so, you know, you try to counsel people to wait, you know, get the house first. Look, parents play a huge role in this. I see it. A lot of millennials that have their act together, they have their debt under control, they want to buy the house first and then the toys, and then conversely, you know, probably a similar number that are doing it the other way as well. So debt to income is definitely a factor in all of this. Cash available for down payment, another factor. And then just credit in general. You know, there's a lot of people in their early 20s, mid-20s in this millennial gap that they haven't got credit cards and they haven't got this and they haven't got that. So they need to work on building credit. The big thing, you know, we look at credit, income, asset, you know, and with credit, where are those scores at? That's going to direct you to an FHA loan or a conventional loan. With assets, do you need down payment assistance? There's a lot of programs right now in the state and locally for down payment assistance. Income, have you been on the job in that field with a regular amount of hours? Every client that we see is different. I mean, they're just, and so you go off the experience. I mean, I know that I brag about this a lot. We closed over 1,000 purchase loans in Tri-Cities last year. We've seen, well, I don't want to say everything because as soon as I say that, something different happens.
Yes, but, absolutely. We know about that.
We've seen a lot. And between the expertise of the loan officers at Home Street, we can normally figure things out, or we can give them a plan of, okay, I want you to do this to raise your credit score. You need to focus on working more 40 hours a week per week rather than, you know, taking a little bit of time off more here or there, especially into a new job, new field, out of college. We want to see that solid income there. And then assets, okay, you need to save this much. We need to focus on down payment assistance where you're going to have to take a class to qualify for that program. It just, it depends on the group of individuals that we're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know it's unique. And a shout out to you guys, too. I got to thank you. There was a couple transactions that we were on, and there were some hiccups along the way. And one thing nice about having somebody local is, you know, we can get on the phone and we can talk to you and Mark and your office and be like, okay, what, you know, what's going on? How are we going to solve it?
What's the timeline,
and,
right?
Yeah, and how did we get there? And it's nice knowing, you know, sometimes those things happen and it's a red flag if you're at another lender. But if you're at a local trusted lender like yourself, it's not a red flag. It's just something that we're working on. And so it's nice to have somebody that will tell us if there is a red flag. Or, you know, I appreciate the no's as much as I appreciate the yeses. You know, when you talk to a client and you say, we can't do this because XYZ, it's much better than, well, we might be able to in a perfect world if it's on the day in August of the solar eclipse is happening, you know, and then really be, you know, put somebody in a bad situation if they make an offer on that house. So thanks for working through those issues and always being able to answer our phone calls and those questions.
Well, I appreciate it. You're welcome for that. Going back to that, talking about the listing side, Lance, and the inconveniencing of everyone, what does a buyer and a seller have to lose if, yeah, a false pre-approval, and let alone their own time? But I mean, what do you see? Earnest money and what else?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing is it really, a lot of times in those instances, they could put their earnest money at risk. If they, you know, had to change the loan program and didn't get the right permissions to do that, and they had to do that at the end of the transaction. A lot of times too, you know, in the beginning, a seller will be potentially excited about working with somebody, but then when they get into a position of, you know, something that might be out of their control, if they find out that they were, you know, falsely induced into that transaction and the financing wasn't as was described to them, well, a lot of times then they're not as likely to make a concession on something else. And so it can really cause, you know, I call it a lot of little things equal one really big problem. And so they just want to make sure that they've got the financing portion of that solid so that that's not in that equation of another little problem. And so that makes a big, big difference. So good information out of there, Mike. If anybody has any questions about that, what's the best way for them to get over to you at Home Street?
Office line is 572-3650.
Another important thing to note from this recent report was it was really interesting, not just millennials, but a little bit about the types of properties that are being purchased. And so it was really interesting that new home sales made up 14% of the national market last year, which then, of course, you know, existing pre-owned homes at 86%. So Tri-Cities now, we've talked about there being an inventory shortage. Over the last 5 months, we've been averaging 19% new construction as far as a percentage of the purchases, which you would likely find that to be true. When there's low inventory, a lot of times people go to builders and they go to new construction purchases to make up the difference. So we're seeing our particular market running 4 to 5% over the national. Another thing to note, too, is that in the millennials, the national average might be 14%, but only 11% of millennials were purchasing new homes. They were much more likely to purchase a resale home.
And that's price point, right?
Yep, price point is going to play into that. So they're probably going a little bit less, and they're probably trying to stretch their dollars a little bit. Now, as far as the type of home purchased, it is still your detached single-family home is absolutely killing it as far, you know, way, way higher percentage, 87%, as opposed to a condo or a townhouse type purchase or a duplex. So still just the single-family home being the most popular. And the typical home purchased across the board, across all generations, 1,900 square feet, 3 bedrooms and 2 baths, built in 1991. That's your typical profile when you average out all of the homes. Another thing to note, which is interesting, is that the median mileage, we don't think about this too often, But the mileage between the home you sold and the home you bought across the board was 12 miles.
Wow.
People tend to only move 12 miles within that radius of from their current home. The only age group generationally that was different was that buyers age 62 to 70, the median distance there goes up to 25 miles because across the board nationally, they're retiring.
Yeah, they're moving to Florida and Arizona.
Right. So the number of buyers doing that statistically moves that number really, really far out in that. So, and then the average answer given is that overall buyers right now expect to live in their home for 12 years. And I think that's a little high, actually. Mind you, that is expect to.
Yeah, it's just what I was going to say, expect to. I heard more 5 to 7, right?
Exactly. And then the actual averages end up being 5 to 7 because people tend to either outgrow it for different reasons. So,
or looping back toward the first Steph Curry story, you start making more money.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you win
or
the lottery.
You start making more money. So definitely a really, really interesting article that came out there from the National Association of Realtors. So just again to note and credit that this came out of the 2017 Home Buyers and Sellers Generational Trends Report from the National Association of Realtors. So just remember out there, I think a lot of times the millennials get a bad rap a little bit and stuff, but they are actually the overriding and running the highest amount of buyers in the housing market right now. So stand up, pay attention, people. We might have to change how we negotiate a little bit, how they're getting and delivering that information. And I'm just actually having a ball with it. I mean, it's a lot of fun. We're changing how we do things, where our advertising goes on a lot of that. If you have any question about this report or any of the stats that we went over today, please feel free to go to kenmoreteam.com and shoot us a message. And one more time, Mike, the best way to get to Home Street on the financing needs?
Office line 572-3650.
All right, and we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.